decrypted the terrorist's message only 12 minutes before the bomb went off, and using some fast phone work, he saved 300 schoolchildren. "Get this," Midge said, lowering her voice unnecessarily. "Jabba said Strathmore intercepted that terrorist code 6 hours before that bomb went off." Brinkerhoff's jaw dropped. "But then why did he wait?" "Because he couldn't get Translator to decrypt the file. He tried, but Gauntlet kept rejecting it. It was encrypted with some new public key algorithm that the filters hadn't seen yet. It took Jabba almost 6 hours to adjust them." Brinkerhoff looked stunned. Strathmore was furious. He made Jabba install a bypass switch in Gauntlet in case it ever happened again.
"Jesus," Brinkerhoff whistled.
"I had no idea." Then his eyes narrowed. "So what's your point?" "I think Strathmore used the switch today to process a file that Gauntlet rejected." "So, that's what the switch is for, right?" Midge shook her head. "Not if the file in question is a virus." Brinkerhoff jumped. "A virus? Who said anything about a virus?" "It's the only explanation," she said. "Jabba said a virus is the only thing that could keep Translator running this long, so..." "Wait a minute," Brinkerhoff flashed her the timeout sign. "Strathmore said everything's fine. He's lying." Brinkerhoff was lost. "You're saying Strathmore intentionally let a virus into Translator?" "No," she snapped. "I don't think he knew it was a virus. I think he was tricked." Brinkerhoff was speechless. Midge Milken was definitely losing it. "It explains a lot," she insisted. "It explains what he's been doing in there all night." "Planting viruses in his own computer?" "No," she said, annoyed. "Trying to cover up his mistake. And now he can't abort Translator and get Aug's power back because the virus has the processors locked down." Brinkerhoff rolled his eyes. Midge had gone nuts in the past, but never like this. He tried to calm her. "Jabba doesn't seem to be too worried." "Jabba's a fool," she hissed. Brinkerhoff looked surprised. Nobody had ever called Jabba a fool. A pig, maybe, but never a fool. "You're trusting feminine intuition over Jabba's advanced degrees in anti-invasive programming?" She eyed him harshly. Brinkerhoff held up his hands in surrender. "Never mind, I take it back." He didn't need to be reminded of Midge's uncanny ability to sense disaster. "Midge," he begged, "I know you hate Strathmore, but this has nothing to do with Strathmore." Midge was in overdrive. "The first thing we need to do is confirm Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet. Then we call the director." "Great," Brinkerhoff moaned. "I'll call Strathmore and ask him to send us a signed statement." "No," she replied, ignoring his sarcasm. "Strathmore's lied to us once already today." She glanced up, her eyes probing his. "Do you have keys to Fontaine's office?" "Of course, I'm his PA." "I need them." Brinkerhoff stared in disbelief. "Midge, there's no way in hell I'm letting you into Fontaine's office." "You have to," she demanded. Midge turned and started typing on Big Brother's keyboard. "I'm requesting a translator cue list. If Strathmore manually bypassed Gauntlet, it'll show up on the printout." "What does that have to do with Fontaine's office?" She spun and glared at him. "The cue list only prints to Fontaine's printer, you know that." "That's because it's classified, Midge. This is an emergency. I need to see that list." Brinkerhoff put his hands on her shoulders. "Midge, please settle down. You know I can't..." She huffed loudly and spun back to her keyboard. "I'm printing a cue list. I'm going to walk in, pick it up, and walk out. Now give me the key." "Midge." She finished typing and spun back to him. "Chad, the report prints in 30 seconds. Here's the deal. You give me the key. If Strathmore bypassed, we call security. If I'm wrong, I leave, and you can go smear marmalade all over Carmen Huerta. She gave him a malicious glare and held out her hands for the keys. I'm waiting. Brinkerhoff groaned, regretting that he had called her back to check the crypto report. He eyed her outstretched hand. You're talking about classified information inside the director's private quarters. Do you have any idea what would happen if we got caught? The director is in South America. I'm sorry, I just can't. Brinkerhoff crossed his arms and walked out. Midge stared after him, her gray eye smoldering. Oh, yes, you can, she whispered. Then she turned back to Big Brother and called up the video archives. Midge'll get over it, Brinkerhoff told himself as he settled in at his desk and started going over the rest of his reports. He couldn't be expected to hand out the director's keys whenever Midge got paranoid. He had just begun checking the ComSec breakdowns when his thoughts were interrupted by the sound of voices coming from the other room. He set down his work and walked to his doorway. The main suite was dark, all except a dim shaft of grayish light from Midge's half-open door. He listened. The sounds continued. They sounded excited. Midge? No response. He strode through the darkness to her workspace. The voices were vaguely familiar. He pushed the door open. The room was empty. Midge's chair was empty. The sound was coming from overhead. Brinkerhoff looked up at the video monitors and instantly felt ill. The same image was playing on each of the 12 screens, a kind of perversely choreographed ballet. Brinkerhoff steadied himself on the back of Midge's chair and watched in horror. Chad? The voice was behind him. He spun and squinted into the darkness. Midge was standing kitty-corner across the main suite's reception area, in front of the director's double doors. Her palm was outstretched. The key, Chad. Brinkerhoff flushed. He turned back to the monitors. He tried to block out the images overhead, but it was no use. He was everywhere, groaning with pleasure, and eagerly fondling Carmen Huerta's small, honey-covered breasts. Chapter 66. Becker crossed the concourse toward the restroom doors, only to find the door marked Caballeros blocked by an orange pylon and a cleaning cart filled with detergent and mops. He eyed the other door, Damas. He strode over and rapped loudly. Hola, he called, pushing the ladies' room door open an inch. Con permiso? Silence. He went in. The restroom was typical, Spanish institutional. Perfectly square, white tile, one incandescent bulb overhead. As usual, there was one stall and one urinal. Whether the urinals were ever used in the women's bathrooms was immaterial. Adding them saved the contractors the expense of having to build the extra stall. Becker peered into the restroom in disgust. It was filthy. The sink was clogged with murky brown water. Dirty paper towels were strewn everywhere. The floor was soaked. The old electric hand blower on the wall was smeared with greenish fingerprints. Becker stepped in front of the mirror and sighed. The eyes that usually stared back with fierce clarity were not so clear tonight. How long have I been running around over here, he wondered. The math escaped him. Out of professorial habit, he shimmied his necktie's Windsor knot up on his collar. Then he turned to the urinal behind him. As he stood there, he found himself wondering if Susan was home yet. Where could she have gone? To Stone Manor without me? Hey, a female voice behind him said angrily. Becker jumped. He stammered, hurrying to zip up. I'm sorry, I... Becker turned to face the girl who had just entered. She was a young sophisticate, right off the pages of 17 magazine. She wore conservative plaid pants and a white sleeveless blouse. In her hand was a red L.L. Bean duffel. Her blonde hair was perfectly blow-dried.
I'm sorry, Becker fumbled, buckling his belt. The men's room was... Anyway, I'm leaving.
Fucking weirdo. Becker did a double take. The profanity seemed inappropriate coming from her lips, like sewage flowing from a polished decanter. But as Becker studied her, he saw that she was not as polished as he'd first thought. Her eyes were puffy and bloodshot, and her left forearm was swollen. Underneath the reddish irritation on her arm, the flesh was blue.
Jesus, Becker thought. Intravenous drugs. Who would have guessed?
Get out, she yelled. Just get out. Becker momentarily forgot all about the ring, the NSA, all of it. His heart went out to the young girl. Her parents had probably sent her over here with some prep school study program and a visa card, and she'd ended up all alone in a bathroom in the middle of the night doing drugs.
Are you okay? He asked, backing toward the door.
I'm fine. Her voice was haughty. You can leave now. Becker turned to go. He shot her forearm a last sad glance.
There's nothing you can do, David. Leave it alone.
Now, she hollered.
Becker nodded.
As he left, he gave her a sad smile.
Be careful.
Chapter 67. Susan, Hale panted, his face in hers. He was sitting one leg on either side of her, his full weight on her midsection. His tailbone ground painfully into her pubis through the thin fabric of her skirt. His nose was dripping blood all over her. She tasted vomit in the back of her throat. His hands were at her chest. She felt nothing. Is he touching me? It took a moment for Susan to realize Hale was buttoning her top button and covering her up.
Susan, Hale gasped, breathless. You've got to get me out of here.
Susan was in a daze. Nothing made sense.
Susan, you've got to help me.
Strathmore killed Chartruckian. I saw it. It took a moment for the words to register. Strathmore killed Chartruckian? Hale obviously had no idea Susan had seen him downstairs.
Strathmore knows I saw him, Hale spat.
He'll kill me, too. Had Susan not been breathless with fear, she would have laughed in his face. She recognized the divide-and-conquer mentality of an ex-Marine. Invent lies, pit your enemies against each other.
It's true, he yelled. We've got to call for help. I think we're both in danger.
She did not believe a word he said. Hale's muscular legs were cramping, and he rolled up on his haunches to shift his weight slightly. He opened his mouth to speak, but he never got the chance. As Hale's body rose, Susan felt the circulation surge back into her legs. Before she knew what had happened, a reflex instinct jerked her left leg back hard into Hale's crotch. She felt her kneecap crush the soft sack of tissue between his legs. Hale whimpered in agony and instantly went limp. He rolled onto his side, clutching himself. Susan twisted out from under his dead weight. She staggered toward the door, knowing she'd never be strong enough to get out. Making a split-second decision, Susan positioned herself behind the long maple meeting table and dug her feet into the carpet. Mercifully, the table had casters. She strode with all her might toward the arched glass wall, pushing the table before her. The casters were good, and the table rolled well. Halfway across Node 3, she was at a full sprint. 5 feet from the glass wall, Susan heaved and let go. She leapt to one side and covered her eyes. After a sickening crack, the wall exploded in a shower of glass. The sounds of crypto rushed into Node 3 for the first time since its construction. Susan looked up. Through the jagged hole, she could see the table. It was still rolling.
It spun wide circles out across the crypto floor and eventually disappeared into the